Israeli forces raid a refugee camp in the West Bank city of Tokhan. EU leaders approve 1 billion euros in new military aid for Ukraine. And people protest in New York to condemn chokehold killing of an African-American man by a white former Marine. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumisha Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. In the occupied West Bank, a funeral procession has been held for two young Palestinians killed by Israeli forces on Saturday morning. The two Palestinians, both in their 20s, were fatally shot during the regime's raid on a refugee camp in the city of Tulkarm. According to local sources, Israeli troops clashed with Palestinians at the camp. They also prevented medics from reaching the injured. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has reacted, saying that the Israeli crime will not go unanswered. The latest violence raises the number of Palestinians killed by the regime so far to 110. Around 20 of the victims are under 18 years old. Saturday's killings come amid rising tensions in the occupied territories, where Israel has stepped up its crackdown against Palestinians. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kendall, gave us more details about the latest Israeli killing of Palestinians.
Unfortunately, at this time, Israeli forces raided Nur al-Shams refugee camp in Tulkarm, northern the occupied West Bank, and assassinated two Palestinians, 22-year-old Samer Salah al-Shafi'i, as well as 22-year-old Hamza Jamil Khadyush. They were shot and they were left bleeding above the roof of a two-story building inside the refugee camp. Videos came from the refugee camp of Nur al-Shams showing Israeli soldiers surrounding the bodies of the two Palestinians, and they left them bleeding until they passed away. Israeli military just issued a statement now saying that Israeli forces raided the refugee camp of Nur al-Shams in order to kill Palestinians, accusing them of the shooting that was carried out against the settlement of Avni Hefetz outside Tulkarm, this illegal settlement that was built on the lands of Tulkarm 4 days ago. So the Israeli military claimed that the forces raided the refugee camp in order to arrest or to kill those whom the military accused them of the shooting against the illegal settlement. Clashes took place between Palestinian residents of the Tulkarm, of the Ain Shams refugee camp, of Nur al-Shams refugee camp in Tulkarm, and Israeli forces. The military soldiers pulled out from the refugee camp.
Iran and Syria have issued a joint statement at the end of President Ibrahim Raisi's historic visit to the Arab country that took place on Wednesday and Thursday. The two sides have pledged to continue their strategic cooperation in all fields, particularly economy and trade. They have also agreed to continue combating terrorism until all terror groups are eliminated.
Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi on Thursday wrapped up his two-day visit to Syria, where he met with his counterpart Bashar al-Assad. The visit was the first by an Iranian president to Syria since the Arab country was gripped by war in 2011. Raisi has called his Syria visit a turning point in bilateral ties.
This trip will be a turning point in Iran-Syria relations and will have an effect on the region and the trade and economic relations of the two countries.
The Iranian and Syrian governments have also issued a joint statement that highlights several points. The two sides have expressed strong determination to cement bilateral relations in different areas, particularly trade and economy. On Wednesday, the first day of his trip, the Iranian president signed a long-term comprehensive strategic cooperation agreement with his Syrian counterpart at the presidential palace in Damascus. Raisi said the long-term agreement will open a new chapter in cordial relations. 14 more documents were signed as well, all aiming to enhance bilateral cooperation. Iran, meanwhile, renewed its readiness to help Syria in its reconstruction efforts following the years-long conflict triggered by foreign-backed militancy. The pledge was made by President Raisi as he made a speech at the Holy Shrine of Hazrat Zainab, the granddaughter of Prophet Muhammad. Raisi also lashed out at the U.S. and Israel for backing terror groups in Syria.
For 12 years, the oppressed people hatched conspiracies and committed sedition, gave easy money to Daesh and Takfiri terrorist groups, used media empires to conduct psychological warfare, inflicted damage, destroyed homes, killed children, and made women homeless. For 12 years, the U.S., Israel, and the Takfiri Daesh terrorist groups they backed committed crimes in Syria. But Syria is standing strong today.
Combating terrorism is another issue Iran and Syria put focus on in their joint statement. They've pledged to continue to work together to fight terrorism and extremism until all terror groups are completely wiped out. The statement also denounces the U.S. military presence in Syria as well as its looting of the country's natural resources. It demands the international community to bring an end to the U.S. measures. The Iranian-Syrian statement also denounces Western sanctions imposed on both nations. Meanwhile, it slammed the Israeli regime for its repeated acts of aggression against Syria, saying that Damascus has the right to respond to Tel Aviv's aggression. The statement said that the Israeli aggression is a destabilizing factor in West Asia. Iran has said President Raisi's visit to Syria is in line with efforts to reinforce the axis of resistance in West Asia, including in the occupied territories, Lebanon and Syria itself. This should be seen against the backdrop of Israel's weakening position in the region, as the regime is gripped by turmoil inside and facing mounting resistance outside. Iran and Syria are both under Western economic sanctions. The restrictive measures, however, seem to be a blessing in disguise for both nations as they're resolute in overcoming economic hurdles by forming stronger bonds and relying on their own potentialities.
Iran has executed the ringleader of a terrorist group who was behind numerous attacks in the country. Habib Farajullah Taab, nicknamed Habib Asyud, was the leader of the Harakat al-Nidal terror group. He had masterminded several terrorist attacks in Iran, including the one on a military parade in the southwestern city of Ahvaz back in 2018. Dozens of people were killed or wounded in the attack. He was running the terrorist group under the supervision of several foreign spy agencies, including the Israeli regime Mossad. Harakat al-Nidal is a terrorist and secessionist group which focuses its operations in Iran's southwestern Khuzestan province in a bid to create insecurity there and finally separate it from the country. EU leaders sign off a 1 billion euro ammunition package for Ukraine, despite growing financial hardship for citizens throughout the 27-nation bloc. The seventh consecutive hike in interest rates has been confirmed by the European Central Bank. Jerome Hughes reports.
Millions of struggling homeowners with tracker mortgages will soon start paying back even more following a decision by the European Central Bank to increase interest rates by a quarter of 1%.
We have covered a lot of ground in the last 9 months, right? Moving from minus 50 basis points to plus 300 basis points. We are continuing this hiking process.
Rents are going up as landlords with mortgages pass on the costs. The aim is to bring down inflation, but disgruntled unions insist the strategy won't work. It's all linked to energy sanctions against Russia. EU citizens are being financially pummeled. However, the bloc's leaders have just agreed on a huge additional package to arm Ukraine.
So we are talking about 1 billion capacity to upscale our industrial base.
Ordinary people don't see an end in sight to the crippling cost of living crisis.
A person who is employed, he can survive, but just think about a person who is not employed, how it is impacting him.
If we don't have also like kind of a push on the wages, we will not be able to cope with that, and our reserves, our savings, we will go down.
Analysts suggest peace in Ukraine is the answer, but EU authorities say Kiev will be supplied with deadly weapons for as long as it takes.
It is for Ukraine, that is the country that has been attacked, to decide in which conditions it is ready to find peace with Russia.
Employment ministers have been assessing pressures on EU businesses due to high inflation and interest rates. Firms are also struggling to find skilled workers.
26% of companies all over Europe consider that labour shortage are a major difficulty for them.
Economists say because EU leaders have cut off cheap gas and oil flows from Russia, winter 2023 will tell us all we need to know about the bloc's resilience or lack thereof. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Italy and France are once again at loggerheads over the migrant issue. This time, Paris says the Italian prime minister is incapable of tackling her country's migration crisis. The comments caused anger in Italy.
Italy-France government relationship appears to be again in freefall after French Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin said on Thursday that the Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni is incapable of solving Italy's migrant crisis on which she was elected. The derogatory remarks, also reiterated by French Transport Minister Clément Beaune on Friday, have caused uproar in the Italian government. Prime Minister Meloni is said to be on the verge of cancelling a planned trip to Paris to meet French President Emmanuel Macron, while Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani has demanded Paris an apology for what he called gratuitous and vulgar insults towards a friendly and allied country.
This rift of immigration can be framed in a European context with Italy that has repeatedly demanded to improve the burden distribution across the EU. This umpteenth diplomatic spat between Rome and Paris takes place on the backdrop of a new humanitarian emergency in Sudan, which can greatly exacerbate the migrant crisis.
Rome and Paris have often been at loggerheads in recent years. The latest rift dates back to November last year when a French NGO-run search and rescue vessel carrying more than 230 asylum seekers was refused a port of safety by Italy's government for around 3 weeks. On that occasion, in response to the situation, the French government suspended plans to take in 3,500 refugees who had landed in Italy, contravening the European Union's migrant relocation mechanism.
We firmly believe that Brussels must develop a coherent approach to distributing the migrants across the EU. About 94,000 migrants landed in Italy in 2022. You know how many migrants were relocated to France? 38. And to Germany, 57.
Later on Friday, Paris sought to play down the fresh row with Rome, saying that Italy is an essential partner to France and their relationship is founded on mutual respect. Meanwhile, migrant arrivals in Italy have more than tripled from last year. The country's reception centres are overcrowded and some have passed the breaking point. Max Civili, Rome.
A new report has accused French police of illegal arrest tactics during the ongoing demonstrations against an austerity rollback to their pension system. It's just the latest in a long-running series of allegations which have earned French police the moniker of the most brutal in Europe. Marwan Mazahedi reports.
France's chief inspector of prisons has issued a damning report on the use of illegal arrest tactics against protesters by French police. It appears like the latest proof that the right to demonstrate in France isn't as free as their leaders claim. The report said police management encouraged the use of arbitrary, indiscriminate, and even preventative arrests of demonstrators who had committed no crime. The study found convincing proof for their allegations. Only 20% of nearly 1,000 arrests during just 1 week of anti-pension hike demonstrations in March actually resulted in charges being brought. The European Court of Human Rights has condemned physical abuses by French police 5 times in the past 6 years, and the coronavirus paused demonstrations for a year and a half during that era. French police are the most heavily armed, among the least trusted, and among the least popular of any cops in Europe.
Nobody has confidence in the police here. They're overarmed to a scandalous degree. I hope our police are considered the shame of Europe, because that is entirely the case. I'm a government worker, so I have nothing against the state, but the situation is incredibly pathetic.
France has repeatedly not participated in pan-European Union de-escalation police training. This week's International Workers' Day march saw mass indiscriminate arrests and violent tactics. Protesters knew this was coming and turned out by the millions anyway. Many may recall back in 2019 that the Yellow Vest protests only tailed off following 6 months of weekly police brutality, which scared the average person away from political demonstrations. France knows it has an infamous problem with police brutality, but their elites still seem uninterested in finding democratic solutions. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Another protest is held in the U.S. over the death of a black man who was killed by a white former Marine in New York. The protesters chanted justice for Jordan as they gathered outside the Manhattan District Attorney's office on Friday. They called Neely's death an act of a lynching, linking it to the murder of George Floyd by white officers in 2020. Neely, a mentally ill homeless man, died on Monday. A video circulating on social media shows a former Marine holding him in a chokehold before he faints and later dies in hospital. The New York Medical Examiner has called his death a homicide. However, the Manhattan District Attorney has refrained from announcing any charges against the Marine involved in his death. Sudan's army says that it has sent a delegation to Saudi Arabia for a planned truce talks with the Revival Rapid Support Forces as fighting persists in the African country. The army says that the aim is the extension of the current ceasefire agreed with the RSP. This is while the warring sides earlier said that talks in Jeddah will only focus on a humanitarian ceasefire. They said that they will not discuss ending the war. The army and the RSP are fighting a battle for the control of the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Multiple ceasefires have been agreed since the fighting erupted on April 15th, but none of them have been respected. The conflict has so far killed hundreds of people and displaced 100,000 others.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish. We'll be right back. departure.
Iran is a country rich in culture, history, and art. The countless historical monuments scattered across the land are manifest proof of the glory of the ancient Persian civilization. And the development of modern-day Iran is evident in its major cities and metropolitan centers. But perhaps what's remained hidden from both foreign and domestic tourists are some of Iran's stunning natural treasures. I'm Daniel Arya. As the 18th largest country in the world, Iran offers a full gamut of climates and geographical attractions, from mountains and deserts to forests and caves. Iran's diverse and dramatic landscapes offer some truly awe-inspiring and unspoiled views to discover. In this week's program, we will follow Javad Gharayi, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the southern regions of Iran, where the hot sand dunes of the desert meet the turquoise and tranquil waters of the Sea of Oman. Stay with us.
Travel is the most important thing in life to me. The reason I travel so much to the unknown spots of my motherland is that I want to discover the hidden beauties of its environment and to meet its diverse ethnic groups. I believe that city dwellers, with all their knowledge, education, and modernity, must have a good relationship with the natural environment and with nature dwellers in order to live a richer, more peaceful life. A relationship like this is vital for our survival in the world we live in. It's early February. In this season, temperatures can plunge to minus 40 degrees in the towering Mount Damavand region. But I've come to a part of Iran where the temperature is as high as 20 degrees above, perfect for a good, long trip in the winter. I'm Javad Gharayi. I'm an Iran trotter, and this time I have traveled to the southernmost spot in my beloved country, Iran. Follow me to one of the most beautiful and pristine areas of my country, in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. To be exact, my destination is the southernmost area of the vast Balochistan region. In terms of culture and ethnic groups, Sistan and Balochistan province is divided into two parts: Sistan in the north and Balochistan in the south. During my many trips to the natural beauties of beloved Iran, I have come across multiple beautiful mountains and spent time traversing most of them, from freezing tall rocky mountains to forested highlands to those sitting on the hot and dry deserts of Iran. But this time, on one leg of my trip to Sistan and Balochistan province, I'm supposed to find mountains that are impossible to climb. The shape of these mountains, or should I say hills, is unique and beautiful. The locals and tourists who have visited this area have named these hills Martian Mountains, Many believe that the rocky formations in this part of Iran are very similar to those on the surface of planet Mars. Geological experts say these hills are sediments at the bottom of a sea that used to be here millions of years ago, were initially buried under millions of tons of soil following the change in the shape of the Earth's crust over the years, and were later unearthed as a result of climatic changes and monsoon rains that washed away the dirt, exposing the real face of these bizarre hills. These mountains are among the most beautiful in Iran, in my opinion. They are no less beautiful than Mount Damavand that's been registered as a national heritage. I hope the Martian mountains of Sistan and Balochistan province, of the Balochistan area in the Chabahar region to be exact, are also put on the national heritage list. The thrust of the Gulf of Oman oceanic crust under the southern area of Balochistan, in addition to wind and water erosions, are among the reasons behind the emergence of these beautiful elevations. They are made up of sedimentary rocks containing clay and lime. The beautiful furrows on their exterior have been carved out by centuries of erosion. The heights of Martian hills vary from one area to another. At their shortest, they stand at more than 5 meters tall, and at their highest, more than 100 meters. At first glance, these hills, referred to as badlands by geologists, may look like they are not very resistant, but you will change your mind once you inspect them up close, although they're not resistant enough against the rain and water of Balochistan. In the midst of these mountains is a plain where rainwater has accumulated over many years, creating a spectacular lagoon by the name of Lipar. Environmentally, Lipar, with its many and varied animal and plant species, is an important lagoon in the region. It is an important feature of the natural environment in Balochistan. The local population use water from the lagoon for their animals and in farming. I'm on my way to one of the most beautiful valleys in the Martian mountains. I've named it the Snail Valley. If you want to know why I picked that name for it, follow me. We walk for about an hour to get to the mouth of the valley. Floodwaters set off by seasonal rains have created a beautiful and unspoiled valley and cave. This is the Nahadi Cave. It acts as the entrance to the Snail Valley. My good friend here, Shir Muhammad, was kind enough to come here from Berries to help me find this cave and walk through it to the valley. I'm sure we are in for a treat. Am I right? The valley, I mean the Snail Valley, is a very long and deep gorge that leads to the Terap Mountain. Terap is what the locals call that mountain. The reason I named this the Snail Valley is because this place is littered with shell fossils. You can see them everywhere in this mountain and in this valley. Beautiful shell fossils that have adorned this boulder and this whole area. All the exterior walls of these Martian or miniature mountains and inside the Snail Valley is covered with these shells that have turned into fossil. Another reason is that this valley looks exactly like a snail. It meanders through the mountain from beginning to end. In some places, it wraps around itself and sends you going around in circles before you can get to the other end of it. The Snail Valley is so curvy. It's one of the most beautiful gorges in the Balochistan region. And let's not forget that if a place has a local name attached to it, we should never try and put a new name on it. We must follow the tradition of the locals who have inherited that name from their forefathers, from their ancestors. So once again, we should use the same names as they do. The gorge is almost impassable in some parts, but I am so enchanted by its beauty, I've decided to move as far as humanly possible. Its many twists and turns and the millions of fossils on its walls have redoubled my resolve to move forward. We are around 10 kilometers away from the Sea of Oman. This is a very high altitude. Obviously, thousands, in other words, millions of years ago, this whole area had been under the Sea of Oman, part of what used to be the Tethys Ocean. These fossil shells date back to that time. These are millions of years old. Every time I step into valleys or Martian hills like these, I'm filled with utter joy. But I'd never take any of these back home with me or use them as ornaments. All I do is pick them up, snap photos of them, and put them back where I found them, to share all these beauties with posterity. We must protect these treasures. We are their guardians. We walk a long way and eventually arrive at a dead end. That's when we have to trace our way back. Fortunately, there are no construction operations going on anywhere close to the Martian mountains, and that adds to the beauty and magnificence of the area. After my visit to the Martian hills, I continue my journey to one of the most beautiful semi-traditional wharfs in Iran, the Berri's Fisherman's Wharf. It is operated by the inhabitants of Berri's village, perched on top of these escarpments. Before the village was relocated to the top of the coastal cliffs, it used to be somewhere on the sand beach. Today, the locals call it Old Berri's. The villagers moved from Old Berri's to New Berri's around 20 years ago. One of the most important reasons for their relocation was the strong winds in the area that would blow for 120 days in a row and dump sand and dust on the village. The second reason was the beautiful Berri's Wharf. The architecture used in the homes and other buildings in Balochistan has vividly been inspired by Indian and Pakistani architectural designs. They use different, beautiful, vibrant colors in their buildings. The old mosque here is located in the area where Old Berri's used to be. The rest of the village lies in ruins. They stripped the old buildings of their doors and windows and used them in their buildings in New Berri's. But they have left this mosque intact. Everything in this mosque is there, just as it has always been. That's because the Muslim population in Balochistan have utmost respect for their mosques and sacred buildings. They never demolish them. They abandon such buildings and let nature take its course.
Thank you.
The main occupation of the people of Baris is fishing. The men of this land depend on the sea for their livelihood. Some strike out to the sea in small boats and throw their small nets in to catch fish. Others go out in wooden launches, which could be called the biggest of man-made contraptions. They go out to sea and spend months fishing. These large wooden motorboats are equipped with proper refrigerators and air conditioning for the crew. The fishermen here say they are not happy with their catches in recent years. They say marine life populations have shrunk drastically. The declining numbers of fish in seas and oceans has its cause in different and important reasons. The first reason behind the decrease in the numbers of marine life around the world is the boom in the human population on Earth. The growth in the human population has led to a larger demand for fish and in turn to overfishing by those in the fishing industry. Operations that are carried out via large ocean-going trawlers fitted with radars and other high-tech equipment. Ships that have nets running several kilometers and by means of radars can trap thousands of fish in every attempt in the depths of oceans. In almost every catch, these ships bring home fish weighing upwards of 300,000 kilos altogether. Industrial fishing and the overconsumption of marine life by humans leaves the fish no time to reproduce, pushing many species to the brink of extinction. In a recent survey, researchers at the University of British Columbia found that in half a century, human consumption has pushed down big fish populations by 90%, fish that are in high demand on the market. They have predicted that if serious action is not taken against overfishing by developed countries, all these species of fish will have gone extinct by 2050. Marine life populations are on the decline, which will have dire consequences for humans and the environment alike. The ecosystems of seas and oceans are intertwined with the lives of humans and the environment they live in. They're all very fragile. Iran accounts for only a small portion of the marine life caught around the world. The reasons being high prices, the small share the marine animals have of the Iranian diet, and the absence of advanced fishing vessels in the country. But European countries, the United States, Japan, and many other developed countries play an important role in the destruction of marine ecosystems. They have done more damage to the environment than any other country in the world. And this is a result of a boom in their populations, a change in consumption patterns, and the lifestyle of the people living in those countries. There are two other important reasons that have contributed to the dwindling numbers of marine animals: contamination and global warming. Baris is a very beautiful wharf. It was built at the foot of the Baris cliffs, offering a spectacular view. Launches and boats return here with their catch of the day to sell their prized sea creatures to the middleman. Beautiful the fellow is. The local fishermen here call it the Kilkita in their local dialect. It's so colorful. Unfortunately, she too is still carrying her eggs. They get caught in the fisherman's net in this season. Most of those I've seen were ready to spawn. This is their time to reproduce, but they don't get the chance to do it. They are pulled out of the water along with the thousands of eggs that they are carrying in their abdomens. Poor thing is struggling to get out of my hand. Just look how beautiful it is. So colorful. One of the fishermen gave me this lobster and said I could have it, but I'm gonna let it go because it's carrying so many eggs. After my visit to Barry's Wharf, I set off on a walking journey along the shores of the Sea of Oman. Of course, I'll be walking on the cliffs all along. The view from atop the cliffs in Barry's is simply matchless. Fortunately, there aren't constructions of any kind up here. The area is an asset for Balochistan and indeed for Iran because of its pristineness. I hope to see the same unspoiled beauties and pristineness the next time I visit this part of my country and its beautiful landscape. I hope more and more tourists come to visit Balochistan. Nature travelers go to places that are pristine and untouched in order to immerse themselves in the peace and quiet that those places offer. Beautiful rocky cliffs are where Barry's begins. Those are the shores of Barry's, among the most beautiful of our beloved country, Iran. But the bluff along the shore is crumbling into the sea. The waves lap at the walls made up of millennia-old sediments that settled on the bottom of the Sea of Oman that used to cover this whole area. The bluff is capped by a 2-meter-high layer of rock, like the one I'm sitting on right now. It feels like reinforced mortar with all the shells and algae in it, fossils that have been here for thousands, or should I say millions of years. But the layers underneath are weak and brittle, allowing the waves to chip away at them one bit at a time. The green blocks or rocks that you see on the coast are in fact the top layer of the cliff. They used to be up where I am right now. It's going to take the waves some time to turn them into sand and dissolve them in the water. It's about 60 meters down to the foot of the cliff, and as you can see, a huge slice of the cliff has splintered from the rest, or should I say from Barry's territory, and will crash into the sea one of these days. So I better cross onto the other side because it's dangerous to stand here. I really don't want to go down with it. This gaping crack here is almost 10 meters deep, but it's very likely for it to be much deeper in other parts. It's too dark for me to see. This is a very dangerous spot.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Arabi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Arabi English Radio.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkal, and today I want to talk about another strategy to be taken which is related to Islamic lifestyle. My words are taken from Quranic verses and Islamic narrations. In social life, a person encounters many people who have different temperaments and behaviors. They are not at all the same. Of course, there are many common traits among humans, but at the same time, there are many differences in the way of vision, in the way of thinking, different strategies they adapt when they are going to deal with the events they face in their life and the like. More importantly, some people are naturally violent, vengeful, spiteful, and rude, while some people are kind, good-natured, and well-behaved. As a result, in many cases, a conflict occurs between good and bad people. I need to add that sometimes, even between good people, some problems occur to differences in vision and attitude. But in this program, I want to talk about the first mentioned conflict, that is, that sometimes rude and impolite people cause serious problems for good people. When such a problem occurs, and it happens to a respected person, and when a respected man confronts a rude man that has a bold approach to him, the first question that arises is what he should do in response. Let me give a quick answer to this question and then move to the next issue that is the main point of my today discussion. The answer is that the respectful man should try to keep his composure and do not try to show any harsh and rough and uncalculated reaction. Because often harsh dealings with rude and offensive people do not end in the benefit of good and respected men. Now let me talk about the other scenario, which is that sometimes, even though not uncommon, it happens maybe too much in our life, that a good person who was once treated badly but by another person gains power and authority. For whatever reason, I don't want to talk about the way a weak man gains power, but however, it happens, because with the passage of time, the events changes so much and the conditions become so much different that sometimes a powerful man becomes weak and a weak person becomes mighty and influential, gains authority and power, and the ability to take revenge. This is what I want to talk about more. In this case, it may be thought that it is better to take revenge, because by doing this, we can teach that rude person a good lesson so that he will not repeat that ugly behavior once more. But let me say that this type of treatment is not Islamic. Imam Ali in Nahj al-Balagha has a wise advice regarding this matter and says, when you gain power over your adversary, pardon him, excuse him, so that you will be thankful to God for being able to overpower him. Let's go for a short break, and I will describe the wisdom of this noble narration more. I was talking about a narration from Imam Ali saying that if a person finds the power to take revenge to someone who has oppressed him, it is better to forgive him, and we should avoid treating him the way he has treated us. The change of revenge into forgiveness has an important social effect, and it is that revenge usually progresses exponentially and constantly creates another revenge, another problem, causes more insecurity and even more murder. And it never allows peace and tranquility to be emerged in society. While forgiveness usually put violence to a stop and brings peace to the society. Therefore, in addition to the fact that forgiveness is a moral important an important virtue, it is a valuable social strategy. One of the most important effects and blessings of pardoning the enemies and forgiving the wrongdoers that they had treated us badly is that in many cases the wrongdoers and our adversaries suddenly change and their enmity turns into sincere friendship. No matter how bad people are, often the nature of humanity that is alive, it is alive in their inner body, suddenly may become effective and turn bad people into good and worthy people. Of course, this moral suggestion has an important exception, and that is sometimes the enemy or bad people interpret or forgiveness as a sign of weakness. They interpret or pardon as not being able to do anything, and or pardon causes them to be bolder and let them continue their hostility. In this case, pardoning is wrong. In such case, no one considers forgiveness a virtue, but it is considered a kind of imprudence, and that we are content with the continuation of violence and unjust behavior. But however, this is an exception and not a common prescription. What in most cases should be observed and should be adapted is what Imam Ali pointed to in the mentioned narration, that forgiveness should be observed as the first and basic strategy. However, to forgive and pardon in a case that man has enough power to revenge is a sign of expressing thankfulness to Allah.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Allah, who has bestowed us the power to take revenge, but of course we should not do it. Even the Prophet and his family used to do the same. In the event of the conquest of Mecca at the time of the Prophet, when the Prophet with a huge army became able to overcome the idolaters of Mecca and conquer the city, the first thing he did was that he gave an order to officially announce that he had pardoned all the wrongdoers of Mecca. Among the people of Mecca, there were many people who had oppressed the Prophet, tortured his friends and his companions, and had caused great harm to the Prophet, and even forced the Prophet to leave Mecca and reside in Medina for years. At that time, when the Prophet was leaving Mecca, he did not have enough companions, enough power, and did not enjoy significant might. But at the time he conquered Mecca, he had a lot of power. But his first action was to pardon the oppressors. The Prophet's famous slogan that resonated in Mecca was that he said, "Al-Yawm Yawmul Marhamah." Today is the day of mercy and compassion. We should also train to do the same, that if we gain power, do not think taking revenge is the best reaction. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.